The first hint that something was wrong came before sunrise on a cold morning in Minnesota. Federal agents moved through the quiet parking lot of Petters Group Worldwide with steady purpose. Inside the main building, offices sat dark, except for a line of lights burning in the executive wing. For years, investors believed this was the command center of a booming electronics business that moved truckloads of televisions and cameras to major retailers. They believed the returns were real. They believed the paperwork proved it. Yet the documents that once inspired confidence now sat stacked on conference tables as agents photographed and boxed them for review. Purchase orders, invoices, shipping logs, all of it had supported a business that investors thought they understood. The question hanging in the air that morning was simple. If the deals were as strong as advertised, why had the payments slowed and the internal warnings grown louder? As agents worked, they saw signs that the truth behind the promise of bulk electronics might be something no one expected. Chapter 1, The Paper Trail. The morning that federal agents arrived at the Petters Group Worldwide offices marked the point where quiet worries turned into open concern. The building sat in a business district outside Minneapolis. It looked like any other corporate center. Most offices were still dark when the agents stepped inside. Their footsteps echoed through the lobby as they moved toward the executive floor. They had come with questions about records that had supported years of investment deals. For a long time, the story had seemed simple. Tom Petters led a company that claimed to buy electronics in bulk. Investors believed these products went to major retailers. They believed the paperwork confirmed every step. Purchase orders showed demand. Shipping logs appeared to show movement. Invoices listed prices and delivery windows. A smooth system on paper. A system that had drawn money from across the country. Those early years drew in investors who wanted strong returns, backed by what they viewed as repeatable transactions. Meetings often included samples of supposed deals that involved televisions or digital cameras. The numbers looked steady. Many investors came back with larger checks. They were told their money was used to purchase inventory that big box stores needed right away. Inside the offices, employees watched as the company's reputation grew. They saw binders filled with documents meant to show the path of every product. Everything looked organized. Hard copies of transactions were lined up on shelves. Digital versions sat in folders on company servers. At first, no one questioned how the paperwork came together. They assumed it reflected real business activity. Over time, some staff noticed details that did not fit the pattern. A few payments arrived late. Some vendors asked questions that caught people off guard. A staff member in the accounting department mentioned concerns about repeated delays in reconciliations. Another questioned why certain documents looked almost identical from one deal to the next. The worries stayed quiet. People did not want to challenge a system that had attracted so much money. Investors were told that Petters Group Worldwide continued to scale its operations. They heard about truckloads of electronics that were said to move throughout the Midwest. The idea of quick turnover deals appealed to many. The returns were explained as a reward for funding inventory at the right time. The promise worked. More money flowed in. Then, the first signs of real strain appeared. Payment cycles stretched out. Some investors contacted the company for answers and left the calls uncertain. A few employees tried to understand why internal numbers no longer aligned with past reports. Conversations behind closed doors grew tense. It was becoming difficult to hide the widening gaps. The turning point began when a person inside the organization raised concerns about irregularities. What started as private comments turned into a series of reports shared with authorities. The information suggested that some records might not reflect actual product movement. The reports did not claim the full picture. They only flagged troubling patterns. Federal interest followed. Agents reviewed the initial documents they had gathered. They looked at the repeated structure of transactions. They tried to determine whether the alleged shipments had ever occurred. The paperwork had been enough to reassure investors for years. Now, the same paperwork raised questions about the true nature of the business. Phone calls between agencies grew more frequent. More documents were requested. Staff members felt the tension when they spoke about upcoming audits. Some feared the questions would expose problems that had been hidden for too long. Others hoped the scrutiny would finally bring clarity. By the time agents walked into the building that autumn morning, the pressure inside Petter's Group worldwide had reached a quiet breaking point. The company stood on a foundation of documents that looked reliable at first glance. The investigation aimed to determine whether those documents told the truth. The chapter closed on one unresolved question. If the paperwork was real, why had so many people begun to doubt the business that depended on it? Chapter 2, The Numbers That Wouldn't Hold. As investigators pushed deeper into the case, the story widened beyond the walls of the company. The list of victims included individual investors who believed they were helping a fast-growing electronics business. It also included funds that represented pensions and foundations. Some had invested for years. They trusted the steady returns and the promise that every deal was supported by real products. Investigators needed to understand how the supposed system worked. They reviewed memos that outlined a simple claim. Petter's Group Worldwide said it worked with vendors who supplied electronics at reduced prices. The company would then sell the goods to major retailers. The difference between the purchase cost and the sale price produced the profit that funded investor returns. On paper, the structure looked sound. Forensic accountants were brought in to test the claims. They compared invoices with shipping confirmations. They looked at files that showed product descriptions and delivery dates. They searched for signs that matched legitimate supply chain activity. They reached out to vendors to confirm whether the deals had taken place. The deeper they looked, the more the numbers pulled apart. Some vendors said they had no record of the transactions listed in the files. Others confirmed that they had never shipped anything to the retailers named in the paperwork. In some cases, the products listed had not been part of their inventory during the dates shown. Each discovery added to a growing picture of concern. Employees who had worked inside the company began to speak with investigators. Their memories filled gaps that the documents could not explain. One former staff member recalled being told to prepare spreadsheets that copied earlier templates. Another described pressure to complete documents quickly without access to supporting information. Several mentioned that they had seen signatures on forms that they did not remember processing. These interviews added emotional weight to the investigation. Many employees had believed the company was legitimate. Some described long hours and a sense of loyalty that kept them quiet when they noticed inconsistencies. Others said they feared losing their jobs if they asked the wrong questions. The pressure inside the company had shaped how people acted and what they chose not to see. The midpoint of the investigation arrived when a team of accountants identified a pattern that changed the direction of the case. They traced a series of deals that appeared to involve large shipments of electronics. When they contacted distribution points and transportation companies, they found no record of the trucks. There were no logs showing arrival times. There were no scanned labels or loading documents. The shipments appeared only in internal files. Investigators took a closer look at the emails tied to those transactions. The messages referenced products that were supposed to move quickly due to high demand. Some messages appeared to confirm delivery. When the investigators checked server metadata and timestamps, they noticed inconsistencies in how the messages had been created. Several messages did not match the timeline the company had provided. The digital forensic team reviewed financial transfers linked to the deals. Money moved between accounts in ways that did not reflect the sale of goods. The transfers looked designed to create the impression of activity. Yet there was no supporting evidence showing real products being purchased or shipped. Each discovery chipped away at the belief that the electronics business existed. By this point, the investigators faced a new question. If so many documents were unverified, how large was the false structure behind them, and who inside the company understood what was happening? That question pushed the investigation toward the next phase. Chapter 3, The Break That Shattered the Illusion. The break in the case arrived when investigators received cooperation from someone who had worked close to the center of the operation. The individual provided documents that were not part of the files collected during earlier searches. These documents showed how purchase orders were created. They revealed patterns of repetition and gaps that the company had never explained. The files also included statements that pointed to knowledge of the fabrication process. Investigators reviewed the new material with care. They compared the documents with earlier invoices and logs. They found repeated formatting and wording that suggested a single source. They found signatures that did not match known signers. They found transaction dates that clashed with financial activity. The evidence pushed the investigation into clearer territory. Once agents confirmed the authenticity of the whistleblower's material, they prepared for the next step. Federal warrants were issued for searches at several locations tied to the business. Teams were sent to offices where servers, hard drives, and financial records were kept. They also visited storage locations where physical evidence might show whether real inventory had ever existed. The searches revealed a stark picture. At each site, investigators recovered boxes of documents that supported the same internal narrative. Yet they found no proof that large shipments of electronics had passed through the facilities. There were no pallets, there were no distribution tags, there were no signs of warehouse activity. The absence of real goods stood out more than any single document. As more evidence came in, investors began to realize that the losses might be severe. Some contacted authorities to learn whether their money could be recovered. Others reached out to fellow investors to compare what they had been told. Many had believed their investments were backed by real trade. Now they faced the possibility that the entire structure had rested on documents rather than products. Federal prosecutors moved forward with the case. They reviewed the evidence to determine which parts of the operation could be proven as fact. They distinguished between statements that were allegations and those that could be tied to records and witness testimony. They built a timeline showing when documents had been created and how money had moved through accounts. They identified the point where the operation shifted from questionable to fraudulent based on the evidence. Court filings described how the scheme operated. They noted how investors were promised returns based on deals that did not occur. They explained how documents were created to maintain confidence. They listed the amounts invested and the losses recorded. They also detailed how some employees had been directed to complete tasks without understanding the full scope of the activities around them. The collapse of the business became clear as the case advanced. Investors learned that the electronics business had not functioned as described. They learned that many purchase orders were fabricated. They learned that large sums had moved through accounts without any link to real products. The truth left a long trail of financial and emotional damage. When the case reached sentencing, the court reviewed the evidence and the impact on victims. Testimony from investors described retirement plans that had disappeared. Others spoke about trust they had placed in the promises of a growing company. The court considered the scale of the losses and the planning behind the operation. A lengthy sentence followed, marking the end of the legal process. The aftermath extended far beyond the courtroom. Minnesota's financial community examined how such a large scheme had operated for so long. Firms reviewed their due diligence practices. Advisors spoke with clients about how to verify deals that looked strong on paper. Regulators studied the gaps that allowed the scheme to grow. The case became a reference point for understanding how fraud can hide behind documentation that looks complete. In education sessions and financial panels, experts pointed to the Petters case as a reminder of the limits of paperwork when it is not supported by real activity. They discussed the importance of independent verification. They spoke about the need for transparency in private investment deals. They used the case to teach how warning signs can appear slowly and then all at once. For the investigators, the resolution brought clarity, but not comfort. They had uncovered one of the largest financial frauds in Minnesota history. They had followed the documents until the picture became clear. They had answered the central question that guided their work. The final line in their reports pointed to one lasting theme. When an entire empire is built on paper, the truth becomes impossible to hide forever.